I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is WTIC's Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel and Dennis Halnan of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and Dennis by phone at 860-522-9842 or email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com. Get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here are Eric and Dennis on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Good morning to Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Dennis.
And I'm Eric. And Dennis is driving the bus this morning.
Yeah. Aren't you all having a lot of fun with
that? You're doing great. We got to do a little cross training, you know?
Well, it is about time that I actually do this.
Yeah. So here you are.
Yeah, that's right. Doing it now. We're back to discuss your computer questions, concerns, and give you a helping hand with your technology. Right now, we've got three lines wide open. The correct number is 860-522-9842, and that is the one and only number now.
Yeah,
there's no 800 or anything else. And we have Gary from Weathersfield on the line.
All right.
And we'll see if we can't pick that up.
All right, Gary.
Good morning. Yeah, good morning. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Hello.
Good. Dennis, you're doing a good job.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work. So I actually had two questions for you, but I just, while online, I discovered a problem I had with my computer, or with a file. I seem to have lost write permissions to it.
Oh.
I can't write to it. I try to save some data to it. And I've gone in and unlocked or changed it from read-only to, well, not read-only, and still doesn't. I'm still getting the message when I try to write data to it or write to it.
Okay.
Any ideas?
Well,
what's the error?
Yeah, what?
Oh, I don't have permissions to write to the file.
All right, is this a file on your hard drive? Is it on an external drive? Or
no, it's on a hard drive.
All right, and is it in a Windows directory, or is it somewhere else on the drive?
Somewhere else, yes, okay. Somewhere else.
And this is just a file that used to be fine, you were able to read and write to it, and then suddenly it's telling you you can't?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's correct.
So you got the attribute set right.
Mm-hmm.
Next step is your properties in the security tab, right, because it's a permission setting.
Yes, yep, okay.
So you're going to have to get and allow full control to this particular file. So you're going to right-click on that file or folder.
Yep.
Properties.
Yep.
Security tab.
Security. Yep.
Edit.
I don't see an edit. I see advanced. Oh, yes, you're right. Edit. Yes.
Yep. And then go ahead. You're going to check the allow box for full control.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, they're not checked. Very good.
All right.
Oh.
Okay.
That was quick.
Nice. Well, that was quick, yeah.
I was thinking maybe he had to change ownership, but it doesn't sound like he's going to have to do that.
No, that'll do it.
Could have been a Microsoft update, or did I do something inadvertently?
Well, we tend to feel user error is the primary cause of all computer issues.
You're not making me feel bad.
Just kidding. It could have been. I mean, Microsoft could have done something, but users are definitely half the problem. And Microsoft is definitely always a major contributor. I mean, permissions changes, Dennis, like this.
Yes.
That you've seen with our client base. I mean, it's controlled usually by the domain controller. You know, you're dealing with domain permissions, but
right.
This is local permissions. I mean, something would have had to purposely change the ability for you to edit that or modify that file. And typically, it's an administrator that has to do that.
Yes.
Were you playing around in there, Gary? Were you just kind of messing?
No. Not consciously.
All right. Well, that's back to my original thing.
But it's a lot of keystrokes. Well, not a lot of keystrokes. You know, it's a few keystrokes to be able to do that.
Right. Yes.
So, you know, you'd think I would have somewhere along the line figured it out.
What kind of file was it?
It was just a data file. That's all. So,
yeah, I can't imagine it be if you purposely doing it. So, I mean, Microsoft could have changed permissions, but that also was unusual.
I don't know. I do use a replacement for a File Explorer. You know, I use a third party.
A different tool?
Okay.
I should mention that. So that may have done it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one of their updates, but.
And did you restore it? Did you restore this file from another backup or something like that where the permissions were different on the file? Because that could be the case too.
No, not that I know of.
All right.
But.
Well, we fixed it, we hope.
Yes, you did. Thank you. The second comment is I bought a USB, a device to stick into my iPhone to back up my data.
Okay.
With an app. It just gives me a little bit more peace of mind that I'm storing my pictures on the drive, and I have, I have them in my possession as opposed to being on the cloud.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure if Android has that option but...
You can get the same kind of devices for Android. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it seems to work pretty good. It's fast. They're incremental backups, so I have, their time date stamped. And, again, it gives me some peace of mind that I have, I have the photos in my possession as opposed to being on the cloud.
It's a good point and maybe a good solution for even my wife that I should consider, but to actually have to train her on backing up her phone would not be fun. It really wouldn't be. But that would be a possible solution in her case that we could possibly use. And yeah, when you have it on the cloud, there is that risk of I don't have to access your phone. I only have to access the cloud. Now, right. It's supposed to be encrypted, but if I can break into your cloud account by sitting there in Uzbekistan, pounding away at, Gary@gmail.com. I already know your email. I already know that first step of your login is your email box. Now all I got to do is figure out your password. And as in the case of Kash Patel, where he actually was hacked, your password probably is 123456 also.
Well, seven.
Seven.
You're right.
So you're not wrong with your thinking there, right? Because that's how the bad guys would get access to your data. They would try to hack your cloud account. And that's what happened in the Fappening. That's what happened in all sorts of places. So... backing it up locally. So do you put it in the cloud as well?
No.
Okay.
Now,
No data, or do you do your apps at least so that if your phone got blown up, you wouldn't have to reload all your apps, or do you not care?
I don't care. Yeah.
I
don't care.
All right.
Very cool.
Very independent guy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm an old guy, so technology sometimes scares me a little bit. So
yeah.
Scares me.
Yeah.
How about I run my own instance of Nextcloud, again, trying to keep everything kind of private.
Okay.
Any have you heard any downside of Nextcloud?
No.
As compared to Dropbox or cloud storage, I should say, in general.
No. It's a tried and true product.
Beautiful.
Yep.
It works great. I have no complaints about it. It's kind of nice to access. I was away last weekend, I needed some notes, and I was able to access the notes right over, right over the Wi-Fi where I was staying. It was good. It was kind of nice. So
yeah, the benefit of the cloud. Yeah.
Yep.
Now again, do you back up the Nextcloud though? Because your cloud can get destroyed too. Just because it's on the cloud doesn't mean it can't lose everything. That's why we have to back up Microsoft 365 accounts, because the data, just because it's in the cloud, doesn't mean it's being backed up by Nextcloud. Nextcloud just gives you a repository. I guarantee you. They don't tell you that they're responsible for your data in any way, shape, or form.
Nextcloud is your own hosted cloud.
Right. So you need to back up your cloud. If you put data in there, you want to get back if somehow they have a problem.
You need another location for all that. Yeah.
Right. Do you back that up, Gary?
They have a neat feature where you can sync it to a local drive.
So you sync it back.
Hard drive. So I sync it back, yeah.
There you go.
Excellent.
And you actually do it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you've exactly. practiced restoring.
Well, that is next. You're right. Yeah, that's
the next step.
But I feel pretty confident that, again, the stuff I'm using, I do have a backup, a third backup or a redundant backup.
Good.
Just in case.
Awesome.
So, but it's just, again, it's for me, it's having access when I'm not home
to
my data for research. Mm-hmm. So
sounds good.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
You got everything covered.
All right, Gary, we're glad to help. Yeah, thank you for the idea for the backing up of my phone there. I should probably consider it.
Very good. Good luck.
Thanks. I'm going to need it.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, she doesn't like technology, so you got to slide him down.
Okay. And he already dropped. Hung up.
Sometimes you get the dial tone, but usually that seems to be fixed. No, yeah. Maybe the dial tone's virtual these days. Do you want to? So we got four lines wide open, guys. 860-522-9842 is the number. Feel free to get online. We're here till 11, and we'll take your computer comments, questions, and concerns, whatever we can do to help you out with your IT issues. We're here to do our best. You have a story you wanted to bring up, Dennis?
Yeah, I wanted to bring up a story. There's a study about AI leading to what's called, according to the headline of the article, cognitive surrender.
That sounds not
people,
good.
People tend to lose critical thinking skills, logical thinking skills, if they rely too much on AI.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense to me.
Of course, it's going to happen. You're gonna offload all of this analysis that you used to do on your own to an AI that does it for you, and then you regurgitate it to everybody else. And your own thinking skills are going to atrophy.
Well, just think about being a GPS zombie. So many of us are. I am. I can't tell north
Ditto
and south.
Here.
But without
Ditto
GPS,
here.
I wouldn't know where I am.
Yep.
In general, but even in my own town, I can get lost. Don't get me wrong. I used to be able to handle that, but I can't anymore. My brain doesn't think about where I'm going anymore. I'm thinking about something else. I've used the technology to replace that.
Well, yeah. How many years have I been coming here to the radio station on Saturday mornings?
Yeah, and you put the GPS in.
And I put it in Waze, and I drove here.
I do too, but I do that for reasons of traffic or accidents.
Well,
and stuff like
yeah,
that.
It's still nice to know. But yeah. Even then, I for some reason, I just like the crutch, you know?
And then even like a calculator, right? Even we're no longer even bothering with basic math. We just let the calculator do it, right? So now you think about AI and asking it to write your paper. You're not going to have a clue about what you're talking about.
Right.
And that's what they're saying is happening here is you're going to lose your cognitive.
They called it cognitive surrender.
Surrender just sounds awful.
Yeah, that sounds really, really awful.
All right.
But it also made me recall my Socrates.
Yes.
Where Plato reportedly said this because Socrates never wrote anything.
Mm.
Because he didn't.
Well, that's a lot of chipping around. You got to use all those hammers and chisels back then.
He didn't think that literacy was good for people's brains.
Literacy.
It made them stupid, according to him.
Writing and reading.
Yeah. Reading and writing made people stupid.
Because they weren't thinking about it.
They would put everything on paper or on whatever material they had back then, and they would forget things.
So then, so you juxtapose what Socrates is saying with what this story is saying. We would agree with the story versus Socrates. I would contend Socrates was incorrect.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, in hindsight, we now know that he was wrong.
But he was one of the experts.
in his day, he was the expert. He was the guy.
Yeah.
And everybody went to him.
Right.
Some of that wisdom didn't really work, but I was just kind of interested in this story and how it affects people's,
who did the story, the study, do you remember?
It is
University of
researchers from the University of Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
We'll put it up there for you to link and read literally look at it, and understand that you're going to get stupider and stupider as you leverage Grok or Claude or Gemini or any of the other
Co-pilot.
Ones.
Copilot.
Copilot. That's a sad statement, and that's not a good thing in this day and age. You want to step out for a break?
We do want to step out for a break. We will be back.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back.
Definitely. And Dennis is driving the boat.
I am.
The bus. Not the boat. We don't have any boats in radio. It's only buses. And we're going to be here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. I do want to bring this quick story up because it is kind of a problem. It's a big problem.
Yeah.
A hacker is trying to spread malware to millions by hitting Axios NPM software. And that software is something that is a throwaway you wouldn't even think of. But developers use it. It's a pre-built, like I look at it as some sort of pre-built software to help the developer incorporate it JavaScript products. And basically you've got this app you're making and you're going to deploy it to smart platforms like, you know, Apple or Android or what have you. And the hacker injected two malicious software versions into it. So it did. He injected a legit one and then he did another malicious one. And it's a, this is kind of a thing that's kind of self-managed, right? Open source. And this software is downloaded by 100 million times per week.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of downloads.
And so basically, if these guys are not doing a better job of securing the supply chain, in this case, this little app, mm-hmm. these hackers can compromise it to do who knows what. Maybe it's going to be a keylogger. Maybe it's going to capture your keystroke. So again, you're dealing with maybe some silly game that this hacker has put this malware into. The programmer doesn't even realize.
Right. That's the really insidious part of this. The developers that are creating the stuff that you're using
right.
aren't even aware that these vulnerabilities are being baked into their code.
And this had to do with crypto baloney on top of it, even more silly. But the supply chain is vulnerable. And
it's very vulnerable.
What you want to do is limit the amount of apps on your phone to those apps that you know are professionally managed and maintained. But those same programmers could be using this tool and be compromised by it.
I mean,
you wouldn't even know it.
You could be getting your app from the most trustworthy programmer on earth, and they can still be vulnerable to stuff like this.
So this one, plain crypto.js, which can install malware on the computer. The threat is designed to deliver to a Mac OS, Mac, Windows, or Linux-based remote access Trojan.
Whoa.
That's some scary stuff.
Well, yeah, because it's running JavaScript.
Mm-hmm.
JavaScript operates on web servers, and
right.
that means it can affect any operating system.
So I'll put the link to the story. You can read it. And then you're going to tell yourself, then why should I even use anything, Eric? And you're right. My goal in telling you this is not to scare you away, but there's so many people who are just assuming everything's okay. You know, especially Apple users. You guys think you're impervious. This is going after you too, by the way.
Oh, heck yeah.
So understand that you're not. And these tools that these third parties are using are... You know, developers nowadays are just using AI to even do a lot of this stuff. So who knows what's kind of slop we're getting in our apps these days. And then you use these types of pre-built tools to help with delivering the package and it's got a malicious code in it. Just think North Korea and what they're doing to the blockchain.
Right.
So we'll put the link up there for you. I'm not trying to scare you or anything. It's just, it is what it is out there. So it's good until it's not. And that could be like in 20 minutes.
Yeah, true. Well, we've got a call from Stephen from Southington, and we have three lines wide open, yeah. So call in.
Stephen in Southington, our new resident groupie. What's going on there, Stephen?
Yeah. Hello, Stephen.
Are you there,
Stephen? Good morning, Eric. Good morning, Dennis. Good
morning.
So I guess I took over from Danny, huh?
Yeah, maybe. Danny was a great groupie. We miss Danny.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
So, look, the AI thing is just, I'm so curious with it. There's so much to think about with what it can do and how it impacts everybody's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was wondering, you know, with the, is it possible the thing can be used as a fact checker?
Yes.
Oh, 100%.
If you trust that it has, does not have too many biases built in by the developers.
And that it has access to the information
the
that you're trying to get corrected.
Right.
Yeah.
Notebook LM.
It's trustworthy, you would say.
It can be.
So it can be.
Notebook LM, we used to use it for Bob and Karen, right? And we would have it ingest data. And it would, as long as it had enough of that data in there, it could come up with comparisons as far as the information that it's being asked. But these do have biases. So you could get a different answer across different AIs with the same data. That is definitely a fact. And it's just a matter of of the biases that are built into it, which, and also it has to do with your prompting too. You can prompt the biases yourself.
Yes.
Does it tell itself if it's wrong? How does it know?
How does it? It doesn't know anything. So the idea of artificial intelligence is it really doesn't know anything. As far as I understand, it's still an oxymoron to say intelligence. It's not. It's just guessing the next word of whatever it's supposed to be putting out there. So it's not. Doesn't even know if it's right or wrong or anything. It's just regurgitating in some sort of humanistic kind of way, going from one point to the next. So I don't know that it knows it's wrong or cares that it's right or wrong.
Here is what it does care about.
Mm.
It cares about feeding back whatever it is that it thinks you want to hear.
In a sycophant kind of way, too.
Yes. And that's why a lot of things are worded the way they are in AI, because they're trying to please you.
Right.
They're trying to make you happy.
And moreover, no, I'm just kidding. Nobody uses that word other than AI. Yeah, it's crazy, Steve.
Can you carry me over? I have a lot of questions still.
Sure. 100%.
We can. We'll hold our new resident groupie Steve over to the break. And three lines open for you. 860-522-9842, and Dennis will hit the hold button. We'll be right back.
Bye. And we are back on Computer Talk with Tab, with Dennis driving the car today.
The car? It's shrunk to a
bus.
Car? Nah, it's
the bus, the train, I don't know.
You're driving something over
whatever
there.
Whatever it is.
You're doing a good
there's
job.
There's a lot here.
We are cross-training Dennis.
If you've never seen this, there's a lot here.
It's a lot of buttons on a board that is really old.
Yep.
It's probably as old as me or older.
All right. What did I think?
You're back with Steven.
Yeah, we need
more
to
questions.
Pick up Steve. Yep. Steven.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was curious. I've heard the term smart bomb used so many times, and I'm wondering, do they use AI in those things, or are they just like, you know, you computer program it and then that's it?
A lot of smart features, like smart home features, are not really AI driven. They are rote computing driven. As a matter of fact,
smart bombs.
He's talking about the bombs.
Smart bombs.
Yeah, we don't
work
for the Department of Defense.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I would contend it knows just where to go with some sort of GPS to make it smart. But.
Well, that would be variations on guidance systems.
Yeah.
And they've had guidance systems since computers were being built.
Yeah, I think that's really all the differentiator is how it gets to the target and how it's able to do that on its own or not. Versus being a dumb bomb.
So they don't think for themselves, in other words.
No. Come on, Steve.
Would that be a crazy thing or what?
That would be. We don't want no smart bombs.
It would. Yeah.
Would they really be able to figure it out?
I hope not. Yeah, I hope we never have smart bombs like that. That's Skynet again. But no, it's just a GPS thing.
All right, so my other question goes back to the save button with the computer.
Oh, jeez.
When I'm typing away.
Yes.
And I hit the... All right, let's say I don't go online.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit the save button.
Yep.
Does it still matter? Do I still have to be concerned?
No. Then it's local to your computer.
No. So at that point, it's just a typewriter?
Yeah. It'll be local to your computer if you're saving it to your local computer. But if you've told your OneDrive to sync to the cloud, then it's going to go ahead and take that data and sync it
and
to the cloud.
Sync it, yeah.
So it all depends.
Does that happen automatically when you hit the save button?
No, the save button saves it to the computer. But the sync would happen based on what you've told the iCloud to do or the OneDrive to do.
Oh, that's different. I don't know about that. What is the sync thing all about? Did it tell you to hit it?
No. You could configure it.
Right. Let's say you've got OneDrive.
Mm-hmm.
You have it syncing up certain directories on the computer. So as you add a file to one of those directories
by saving it, then
I can't tell you how many times I've had that happen where the computer will ask me for a title and then I'm like, I have to change the title to get it to, you know, go to the next save.
Is it because you're saving the file to the same file name, and then
yes.
because it's finding the existing file, it's asking you if you want to rewrite this?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and I get so confused.
I mean, that would be normal.
Happens. Yeah, it doesn't want to overwrite your work if you don't want it to be overwritten. Depends on how you've got that configured, too, as far as do you overwrite the same file or not. It might want to, you know, what program are you using, Steve? You're making me nervous.
Oh, man, I wish I had you guys.
Well, wait, Steve.
Every time I did these things.
What are you doing for?
It's unbelievable. I spend so much time. I spend days and days, you know, and hours writing these things. And it's like.
Well, what software are you using to write?
Periodic. I thought I was using WordPerfect? Something Word. It might just be Word. With the computer.
Word.
WordPad?
Yeah, maybe
WordPad. The basic one that comes with, no, it wasn't WordPad because that was only a pad.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't going to allow for a page break, which I needed.
Okay.
So Word.
All right.
You must have it set to not overwrite the same file name, which would be a weird setting to ask you every time to.
And I'm not sure how to fix that. So yeah, this is all new territory to me.
So every time you're writing something, you'll start up and you'll actually have to save a new version of it with a new file name.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've had that happen. I'm like, oh my God, I have 100 versions.
Yeah, that's a mess.
With a different, you know, added prefix or name to it, and I'm like, this is ridiculous.
That does sound incorrect. You may want to check out how you've configured saving in your Word. I don't even know how you could have configured it I don't even have a clue as to how you would have done that, Dennis, right? Why would he do what?
I can't figure that out either.
Yeah.
Normally, when you're in a Word document and you're changing it and then you hit save, it's just going to save a new version of the same file name.
Right. So if it's asking you for a new file
name, I didn't get that. It did something different. It said, you know, they put the question on it, and it's like, do you want to save it and change? And then they tell you to change the name, and it's like, okay, so I just alter it by, like, you know, a different name. And I wound up like with like 50 different names at one point with one document I was working on, and I'm like, wow, I don't understand why this happens.
I don't either. We're trying to figure it out ourselves. This is a very bizarre question. But leave it to you. Leave it to you, Steve, our new resident groupie, to ask a bizarre question. That's
great.
Well, here's the thing. Are you hitting save or are you hitting save as?
Oh, geez.
Save as. Save as.
Well, dude.
Then that's exactly what it's going to do. And that's what it's designed to do.
I didn't even think he's doing that. Okay.
All right. In the file dialog, there's file, and then there's save, and then there's file, save as.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. If you're hitting save as, then it absolutely will ask you for a new file name because that is what is designed to do with that particular feature. But if you hit file and then save, then it should just save it as the same file name that it had.
That's weird.
No, actually, that's not weird.
No,
that's how it's supposed to work.
That's how it's supposed to work.
It came up as save as, though. I didn't get that other one.
Well, make sure you choose save.
Choose save. The other way to go would be to hit F2,
F2
key.
The little dots go by, and then you say, yeah, okay, I see this is happening.
Oh, that's crazy.
Well, the other thing that I was going to suggest is to hit the F2 key at the top of your keyboard instead of hitting F12. F12 is save as. F2 is save.
And then they're far enough apart.
And right.
There's a big
reason
for that.
You're not going to confuse them except for the digit 2 that's in them.
I got to write this down. Wait. I got my pen.
All right.
Hold on. Wait. F2 versus F12.
There you go.
Yes.
All right, Steve.
Hopefully F2 is what you want.
We've saved Steve some heartache here with his different versions.
Definitely. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure.
Yes. Not a problem.
All right.
Enjoy your holiday.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Let's move on to see what Paul in Middlebury's got cooking.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week.
In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And we have Paul in Middlebury. Paul, are you there?
Hi, yes, I am.
Okay, I did that right.
You did. Lots of buttons.
And what can we do for you, Paul?
So I have a brother printer. It's one of those fax does everything, but I just use it for printing. But I hit the start button, it doesn't turn on.
Oh.
That's not good.
What does that mean?
Here's number one question.
Yeah.
Is there a power light on it? And is it turned on at all?
No. I don't think there's a power light. I don't think I ever saw one.
Is there any kind of a display on it?
Yeah, there's a touch screen.
Oh, all right. Well, does that show you anything when it's...
Any light? Is it lit up at all?
No.
Okay, it's dead.
Black.
Yeah.
How about that brick? There's usually a brick that interfaces between the actual printer and the wall outlet.
Or just a power cord.
If it's just a power cord, it's not as helpful. But if it's a brick, does it have an LED lit up on it?
It's just a plug.
Just a power cord?
The wall.
All right.
Yep.
Make sure you just reseat those things. So basically, make sure the plug into the printer has not come loose. That does happen.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, I did.
And you don't have a switch on this outlet, do you, where it's switched off?
No.
All right. Because if we have save and save as, we're going to ask these questions. So it sounds like you have permission to buy a new printer.
Okay. I mean, is there a fuse inside the blue or something?
Well, there could be lots of things, but we wouldn't necessarily troubleshoot to that level. If this device is not powering up, it's probably not worth trying to troubleshoot some sort of internal fuse. I don't think there would be.
The power supply within it may have a fuse in it.
Fair
but
enough.
But here's the thing. Yeah. If that fuse is blown, I'm not sure that I would want to repair that because all you're going to do is have it blow again.
Mm.
And who knows what's going on inside that power supply that caused that to fail in the first place. So that's your answer. Even if it is a fuse, you want to replace it.
And is it plugged into a surge strip or do you have it right into the wall?
I did have it in a surge strip, and because I thought maybe the surge strip was bad, I took it out and plugged it directly into the wall, and it doesn't come on.
All right. Question I'm going to ask, is this a laser printer or an inkjet?
Inkjet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. All right. Well, the one thing I was going to say, just for listeners generally, don't plug a laser jet into a power strip. You always want to plug into the wall.
Hmm. Okay.
Or into just a regular extension cord that goes to the wall. You do not want a laser printer to go through a power strip.
I know you don't want it on a battery, but why not a power strip? All mine's on a power strip.
Because when a laser printer fires up to print, it has a very high draw for like less than half a second.
Gotcha.
And that draw can trigger the circuit breaker in the strip.
Interesting. I have not seen that myself, but I believe you.
Yep. It happens.
Okay.
I believe it.
So this is a Brother Business Smart Pro Series printer. Should I go buy a new one and stay with Brother?
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. HP is good, too.
HP is good. Brother is good.
So whatever's
Epson,
on sale.
Epson isn't bad either.
Yeah. Whatever's on sale, but that'll do everything you want it to do. Yeah.
All I want to do is print.
That's all you need then. Yeah. Yeah. Don't get a multifunction then. You'll save some money.
Don't get multifunction. Another question I'm going to have is how often do you really need to print in color?
Very rarely.
Then my suggestion would be to buy a monochrome laser printer.
Mm.
Because that is going to be more cost effective over time than anything else you can buy.
And last a long time.
And yes, it will be much more durable. It'll be much more dependable. and definitely cheaper in the long run to maintain it and use it.
Okay, monochrome laser printer.
Yep.
Perfect. All right.
All right, Paul. Good luck.
I'm going to the store.
All right.
Happy shopping.
Yeah.
Thanks for your help.
You're welcome.
Yeah, all right, bye.
They just fail sometimes.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to slide Paul down. There we go. You're doing good. You're doing good, Dennis.
I'm catching on.
Yeah. Otherwise, yeah, again, the dial tone, the one thing I'm always trying to avoid is that famous that dial tone ring when they hang up and you still have the slider up. And so far, you've done very well.
And another thing that I'm getting used to is getting prompted by Carolyn to go to a break.
That's
so
what she does.
I think we've got to leave. We've got to go. And remember, we've got four lines wide open, so call in. And we are back on Computer Talk with Tab.
Dennis has been driving the bus. Done a nice job here, Dennis, this morning.
Haven't driven it off the road yet.
No, doing fine. Yeah, it's easy. Yeah, it's just a few sliders and lights. So as we wait for your calls, feel free to get online. 860-522-9842 is the number. Iran has been attacking Microsoft 365 accounts with a password spraying attack.
Okay.
Now, Microsoft 365 accounts are the most attacked accounts, period.
Oh, by far.
Business email compromise is typically what most folks want to compromise the accounts for. They can get in your email and try to send invoices and payments to other places and trick people as if they're inside the actual account to do something based on thinking it's a legit person asking you to do it. So business email compromise, big 85% of the cyber attacks these days are that type of attack with 365. So Iran, though, I'm surprised they even have any computers running anymore, they've been going after their neighbors, of course, for some crazy reason. So they're going after the United Arab Emirates. These are municipalities they're going after. 25 organizations there, 300 in Israel. We can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to use password spraying. So basically, it involves using the simplest password. So if you've configured your email box with a really simple password, they're going to try to break in with that type of an attack. It's very basic. It's not that smart. It's just going to say, okay, Dennis's password is the same as our FBI director's 123456. I'm going to log in, and here we go. So, you know, we're not going to find a lot of damage, I don't think, here from this type of an attack. If you turned on two-factor authentication, even with a dumb password, you're probably okay. Yeah. But they are going after it. And, they found 63 attempts at a technology sector, 32 transportation and logistics, 28 healthcare, 28 manufacturing. This is all through Checkpoint, which is a cybersecurity company that is noticing these types of attacks, which, again, if you have the right technology in place, you'll notice these types of things.
Correct.
You need that to be in place.
You need the monitoring to detect the activity.
Gotcha. So, all right, we got a caller calling in for you.
We do. We have Tony from Tolland. And Tony, hello.
Yes.
Welcome aboard.
Yes, thanks. My question or problem is that, you know, I listen to TIC a lot. And for some reason on my phone, when I go into WTIC, I mean, you were talking about apps and not having apps or eliminating apps and all that.
Yeah, don't have apps on your phone you don't need. It's just safe cybersecurity hygiene.
And I don't really know what apps I have or what apps I don't have. I don't really want any apps, but anyways.
That'll do it.
No, really. I mean, sometimes I'll find something and they want me to sign up for the app and I just exit off because I don't even want to be bothered. You know, I do without the whatever information I'm looking for.
Yeah.
But anyways, when I access WTIC.com from other phones and I find the listen now, the red circle with the arrow on it.
Yeah.
I push it and I get, you know, I get, well, I, first of all, I have to go down a full schedule where I can see, you know, what shows have been playing over the last 3 days and select what show I want to listen to.
Yeah.
On my phone, when I do that, you know, it shows me what show I'm looking for and I select the day and everything. And it's showing me the white vertical lines like it's playing, mm-hmm. but I have no audio signal whatsoever. On other phones that I access it on, I have no trouble whatsoever.
So your phone, being a smartphone, has multiple volume levels besides just your ringer volume. You have to have you have a media volume.
Yeah.
But why is it on this phone if I go on other radio station websites?
Oh, you said
I'm able to play their shows and listen to the show.
That I don't know. The way it's described it before was you would go on other phones, but you meant other radio shows. So I got you now.
No. If I go on WTIC from another phone than my regular phone.
Yeah, it works.
I can pick up the whatever show I want with audio signal.
Okay, yeah. So
on my phone, when I access other competitive radio stations, I can get volume on their shows, no problem. It's only WTIC that I don't get an audio signal.
On your phone.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't make a lot of sense either.
Have you tried using the Odyssey app?
Am I on the Odyssey app?
Have you tried that to listen to shows?
Well, that's the whole point. I don't know if I have the Odyssey app or if I don't. But on these other phones that I've tried, mm-hmm. I don't think the Odyssey app is on the other phones either, and I can pick up the audio signal.
Well, yeah, it doesn't make any sense that it'd be specific to the actual website when you played it on your phone. If the media volume is up, there's no reason why 1080 would be any kind of different. It should work in the exact same way any other media site would work on your phone. When you say it does work in other media, so it's not specific. What browser are you using on your phone to go to WTIC.com? Is it Chrome? Is it Brave?
Safari?
Well, I guess I'm not 100% sure. I mean, I have Google and I usually go to DuckDuck.com.
Yeah.
So I'm not familiar with the terminology a lot.
That's okay. I want to tell you to try this. Try the Odyssey app, Tony. You'd know it. So it's an app that you're going to download specifically to listen to radio media. When you're doing it through a browser, it's going to be less reliable, as we're finding. So in your case, you should consider downloading the Odyssey app, and we can put a link to our site. Or you can use iHeart Radio 2. That works as well. But we'd prefer Odyssey if you're a fan of the station, obviously. And you can choose the shows within the app. It's going to be more designed to deliver media to you than the way you're doing it, I think. And that would give you more consistency. Don't know why it's doing what it's doing on your phone, but let's not bother troubleshooting that. Let's just have you do it the right way.
But you guys told me not to sign up for apps.
So don't sign up for apps you don't use. Like, I don't want some crazy Candy Crush third-party app, Tetris, game or something like that you don't need on your
phone. I mean, if you have an app on the phone that you actually use,
go ahead.
I mean, that you're doing what you're supposed to with the phone.
But so many people load so much junk on their phone.
Yeah, and doesn't tend to work out too well when they pile up.
Yeah. So trust us on the Odyssey app. For now, it's good.
Yeah.
It's good until it's not. Every app you run is exactly the same way. You never know when there's going to be an issue with it. But at least you'll get the right media delivered the right way from the app. Does that make sense, Tony?
Well, I'll tell you, the whole thing doesn't make any sense.
I'm with you. I know. It used to be easy.
I know what I'm doing on other phones. I can listen to the shows, no problem. On my phone, I can't.
I hear you. Try the app. Try the app, Tony.
Yeah, give it a shot.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, he's going to try that. We want to thank you guys for joining us on this Saturday morning, and we want to thank Carolyn for producing. I want to thank Dennis for running the board here. You did a great job, Dennis.
Really.
We got through it, sir.
And remember, we want you to be geeks, too.
And thank you, Mike G, for posting everything on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, Mike G is the best.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.